Welcome to the podcast of the Geological Society. In this episode, Geological Society President Lynn Frostick asks what the world would look like as sea level continues to rise. And Bruce Lavelle, Chief Geologist at Shell, explains why he thinks the petroleum industry needs to escape the influence of Charles Lyell. First, as the Society begins a new year of monthly Shell lectures, Lynn Frostick explains what the series is all about.
We were looking, and Shell were looking, to a way in which almost we could do something to help the general population, not geologists in particular, but the general population understand what geology is about and what it does. In one of the meetings, it was suggested that what we might do is have a whole series of lectures through the year which are open to the public, which are free, and where we invite a series of lecturers on different topics to present aspects of what they're doing and what their colleagues are doing on a topic of interest potentially to the general public. Very, very varied topics we've had in the past. We've got another really varied programme for this year.
And have they been successful?
Oh, amazingly successful. Because of the demand for tickets, we've had to go to what's called a matinee in the afternoon. So poor old lecturers have to lecture twice. And then, of course, we record them and we put them on the website so people get a chance then to watch them if they haven't managed to come to the lectures. I think they're an amazing resource. And one of the things that scientists don't do is engage with the public enough. And I think Shell recognise that, and they're very pleased to support this series of lectures.
Lynn will be talking about her research into sea level rise later in the episode. When Charles Lyell published his book, Principles of Geology, he revolutionised the way geologists think about change. Lyell argued that everything geologists see can be explained by processes which are still happening today. Bruce Lavelle explains why Lyell's ideas are still important to the petroleum industry and why he thinks it might be time for a new approach.
Many people looking at rocks find them very boring. They think that rocks are indeed the same. And even to professional geologists, we can identify rocks of wildly different ages, rocks a billion years ago, rocks which are only a million years old, and they will look identical to us. And the reason they look the same is because the way in which they were deposited, the physical processes which were involved in deposition, are the same. And that's actually very useful to us in oil and gas geology. It means that we can use our understanding of recent deposits from the last few years to understand exactly how deposits in the past were formed and therefore make predictions about them. Charles Lyell wrote a very famous book, Principles of Geology, and in that book he laid out a scientific case that geology could be understood by processes that were observable at the modern day. It was a novel approach, and he took that approach, even by the view of his contemporaries, to extremes. Basically looked for an actualistic cause for every signal in the rocks. I think modern hydrocarbon geologists are following Lyell in that they too look at modern processes, they look at modern rocks, and they match them to past rocks. But once you take away the first order similarity between the rocks, then there's a case to be made that the conditions under which they were deposited were substantially different. The atmospheric chemistry, the ocean chemistry, and the range of magnitude of the processes that were operating. So, for instance, the tidal range, the strength of the wind, or the atmospheric pressure. Those things having changed, there should be signals in the rock which respond to that. And what I'm making a plea for in this talk is that hydrocarbon geologists don't assume simply that rocks have always been the same, and they try and look for those hidden signals and therefore can understand them even better than we do now.
So does that potentially mean that you could be finding resources in places that you might not think to look right now?
Yes, I think it does. We don't have a complete set of analogues for past conditions. And essentially we can only speculate at what the precise deposition environments were in those settings using mini examples at the present day. If we can get a better understanding of how exactly those different environments were different, we'll end up with new exploration models, looking for sandstones in new places, looking for source rocks in new places, and find new oil and gas.
So you sounded fairly optimistic in the talk about how much we have left and whether we'll be able to extract it.
Yeah, I think in terms of resources, the rule of thumb is that we've discovered and used about a third of what nature had in terms of conventional resources. There's about a third under development at the moment, and there's about a third to be developed and to be discovered. in terms of unconventional resources, there's a very large amount of hydrocarbons available if we permit ourselves to exploit those resources, which is a much bigger question, of course. A good example is shale gas, where the conditions under which the ideal shale gas reservoirs were deposited have definitely varied over time. And I think understanding those conditions in detail, so how the organic matter was deposited, how the mineralogy of the shale changed, will allow us to predict much, much better. Now, in Lyell's time, there was a very healthy debate about the extent to which the geological record had unique sets of circumstances which were not represented at the present day, or had processes that were operating at different rates or different intensities than the present day. And I think recently we've come to understand that that is indeed the case. But I think the debate would be very familiar to Lyell's contemporaries.
So he was partly right.
My judgment is that he was making a point, and sometimes to make a point you have to perhaps overemphasise it to get it across.
That was Bruce Lavelle speaking after his December Shell London lecture. To kick off a new year of Shell lectures, Lynn Frostick, the Society's president, explains her research into rising tides and what this means for the future of our coastlines.
Your lecture was called Living with the Rising Tide. Is the rising tide something that's inevitable?
Yes, I mean, the tide has been rising, or the sea level has been rising for the last 10,000 years approximately, since the last glaciation ended.
We read a lot in the papers and hear a lot about melting ice in the Antarctic. How much is that a factor?
That's probably one of the most important factors in the short term, is how much of the land ice melts, because that actually adds water to the volume of the oceans. Fundamentally, the Antarctic is the largest amount of land ice we've got. And if that melts, and when that melts, and it is melting at the present time, then that's going to make a huge difference to sea level.
So presumably, if sea level started rising up towards the end of the last ice age, that was partly because of melting glaciers.
Oh, yes, yes. So we have vast amounts of water bound up in land ice. I mean, we had a big ice cap over Scotland, penetrating down into England, the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, vast amounts of water held up in glaciers, largely on the land. So since then, the melting of that, plus the fact that the relationship between land and sea has changed as well. So if anyone goes to Scotland, you'll see raised beaches and raised cliff lines around the coast, and that's because Scotland has been rising since the last glaciation, because all the ice has been taken off it, so it's now going, whoa, relief, and it's recovering its previous position. It's exactly the opposite of the south of the country was sort of relatively high during the glaciation and is now recovering from that as well, but it's sinking. So as Scotland goes up, the southeast of England goes down.
Which presumably is why it's more of a worry for people in the southeast in terms
it
of
is.
Flooding.
It is, and if you think about it, the southeast has generally got a lot of low-lying areas. Not only have we got sea level rise and the problems associated with that, but we've got sinking land.
In your talk, you showed a diagram of sort of oscillations that have been going on with sea level for the past millions of years. Some people might view that as a reason to think that sea level rise is just a natural occurrence. It happens, it goes up and it goes down. Is there a human role in this as well? Should we be worried about that?
Yes, there is a human role. And I think all of the scientific evidence points to the fact that human beings are producing carbon dioxide, which is accumulating in the atmosphere, which is acting to produce a greenhouse effect and increasing the temperature of the atmosphere. That will mean that ocean temperatures increase. That in itself will cause a rise in sea level. Increase the temperature of any liquid, it expands. And that might not be important when you've got small amounts of liquid, but when you've got the vast quantities of fluid in the oceans, about a 1 degree rise in temperature will produce somewhere towards a 1 metre rise in sea level. But then on top of that, the warming oceans will help to melt the shelves of ice that there are in the Antarctic.
So in terms of things that we can do, I mean, it sounds like sea level rise is something that's fairly inevitable. Are the solutions we're coming up with more of something to mitigate the effect rather than actually try and stop the sea level rise?
We can't stop sea level rise. We can't. It's going to happen. We are accelerating it by producing carbon dioxide, which is going into the atmosphere. So the first thing we've got to do is stop using fossil fuels so profligately, and to move away from them to renewable energy. And that's easier said than done, but it has to happen. And we have got issues with places like China who are increasing the use of coal, etc. But there's a big opportunity for the human race at the moment to move away from this use of what is fossil. Fossil fuels don't last forever. At some point, we're going to have to move away from them anyway. Why not do it now? Why not do it while there's some resources left and we can use them for something else, maybe? Don't wait until it's critical and we haven't got anything left. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is we need to look at the areas where there is a threat and think about how we're going to support adaptation to the threat. And places do that. You can look at Venice. The Venetians live with the Aqua Alta, which is the high tides. They're subsiding and sea level's going up. They've got both things hitting them. And at the moment, they are just about coping with it. We have to explore those options and look at the economic costs and benefits of those options.
And does that possibly mean sort of sacrificing some areas in favour of others?
We already do that. There's a thing called managed retreat in areas where you've got flood banks, actually sacrificing some areas of land which people don't live on in order to save other areas. It's not necessarily very popular, particularly if you own the land which is being taken and sacrificed. There is a cost.
And what's the role of geologists in all this? What can geologists offer to help?
Oh, we've got such a big role to play. You can't understand what's going to happen in the future unless you look at the past events. All of these things have happened before human beings were where we are, doing the things we're doing. We've had sea level rise. We can learn from that. Beyond that, we can work to mitigate the effects of sea level rise by finding ways in which we can slow the impact of sea level rise rather than slowing sea level rise. So I think geologists and geoscientists and earth scientists, people who understand the ocean system, oceanographers as well, they will be the people who can say, okay, we can do this. This will help you. We look at the past to tell us what might happen in the future. And we use all of the data that we've got in order to try and predict so that people have the opportunity to adapt.
Lynn Frostick was speaking after her January Shell lecture, Living with the Rising Tides. To view any of our past lectures, or to see what's coming up this year, you can visit the Geological Society's website. In the next episode, how four generations of field observations are being used to compile a new geological map of the Arctic, documenting the Arctic's unique 4 billion year old geological history.